That's Valerie at Fish
yeah.
Camp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taking a swim.
Mm-hmm.
12 miles above here.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's lots of kids don't swim.
Yeah, she can swim like a fish, this little kid.
I wonder why she went.
She was about 10 years old, 10 or 12 years old, and she wanted to swim the Yukon River up there. You know, that summer, and then there was a boat race going on, and there was a young guy from Nenana got drowned right at our camp, across from our camp. And she saw that body, and after that, I never hear her talking about wanting to swim the Yukon anymore.
Huh. That was the Lord?
Lord, yeah.
Yeah.
Edmund Lord's brother.
Yeah.
They brought his body over to our camp till he was picked up by airplane or something. I was down here then. But I was up there when it happened, but we didn't know he got drowned across our camp till next day. The wind was so bad.
Yeah, bad waves. They said.
Yeah.
Bad waves.
Any loosen. We didn't have very many dogs then. 8 or 9 dogs. That's the way up Martha Slatin in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
No snow machines. We didn't have no snow machines them days.
When did you get your first snow machine?
Gee, I don't know. I think Donald Honey and I, my brother, we got snow machine. We were the first ones to drive a snow machine from Galena up to here. Come on!
The last photograph probably won't copy very well.
A little cooler, huh? Yeah. Yeah, my legs are kind of asleep.
How about this one?
Oh, well. Valerie got down there about 8:30. Oh, I've seen this one already, huh?
Mm-hmm.
How about this one?
Oh, gee, I don't know. That's in Fairbanks. Number 21. I was up there, but I don't know who the heck that could be. It's doing the North American race.
Oh.
I'll probably have to look on the other side. There's writing on some of them, no.
Yeah. It's like Anchorage someplace. Maybe it's a Rondi or something.
Yeah, there's some in there that's with a lot of writing on it. But probably...
I couldn't see it very well. I thought there was you in there.
Let's see. Let me see. I was taking some training program specialist of showing some the working with low income people in all the villages. Of how they make their living and finding ways and getting them funded for certain projects and everything like that. Getting funded from different agencies and everything. I worked for a little over a year, but I was promised too many things and for being funded and for certain villages and I tell the village people about it, and then after that I was turned down.
They promised you didn't.
They say they didn't have no money, and I got turned on and told the native people that there was not enough funds for certain programs they wanted and things like that, and I felt that I was at fault. You know, the people in the villages might think that I was at fault, you know.
Right.
So I just quit. I had done little for some villages, like Shaglock. I got them a road built to their airport and a bridge put in there for them. Grayling, too, a bridge put in there for them. And Anvik. But it was hard. All the agencies, you know, they fund so many villages and then not enough money and then a lot of them couldn't get it.
So they just make promises they couldn't keep.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Copy.
Yeah.
Get it.
Photograph number 21.
Right, this one's really stuck.
In Nome.
There we go.
Mm. Kind of.
1969.
The mile up there.
Yeah, I want to copy that one.
Which one?
That fish, one with all the fish strips.
Hmm? My wife sorting out strips to sell. Because my daughter, she wanted to help too. She's hanging some in the way mostly.
Well, she must have learned something though.
Yeah.
Salmon strips.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're in the race.
Mm-hmm.
You're number 14?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
Gosh, 1968, I think.
How'd you do that year?
Came in 14th. I sold all my dogs there. Here's the picture I was looking for. There's the big flood.
Oh, the one we were just talking about was an anchorage at the Fur Rendezvous.
That's the one that I copied before, Yvonne.
Mm-hmm.
This one?
No, this one over here.
Oh.
It was copied before. Number 22 is... the flood and boat tied to the cabin. Copying right now. Who did you say made that picture?
Randy Jones.
Randy Jones. Is he related to Eliza Jones?
No, no.
Different Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Did he do that this year?
Last, a couple of years ago.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it's just really exactly looks like that cabin up there. He drew it just like that cabin, bush tree in front of there and bush trees all around the back.
Did he stay with you up there?
He stayed in that cabin, but we have another, our own house below.
Oh, is that his cabin?
No, that's my cabin.
Uh-huh. So he just stayed up there
yeah.
to help?
Mm-hmm. Why? I guess it was the way I was brought up. But the last year of school, and I wanted to go to school the worst way, but I had no place to stay. I had to learn everything else myself after that. I learned an awful lot from being around white people, working with them. That's where I learned everything. I had no native people like myself to show me anything. I had to learn how to make my own snowshoes and sleds all by myself. learned how to trap by myself. I had a pretty tough go, but when I first started trap for about 4 years, 4 or 5 years, surprisingly, that's how long it takes to learn how to trap when nobody's showing you how. But later on, I got to be a pretty good trapper after I couldn't trap no more, I guess. Yes, when we first started trap beaver, we didn't know how to trap beaver under ice. Didn't know how to set snares. We had a terrible time. It was the white people that showed us how to set snares under the ice.
Do you remember any of those people's names?
No, I don't. There's some fish and game guys, but he didn't learn. Somebody else told him how, and he showed on a piece of paper how to set our snares. It wasn't the best way yet either, but it helped us out quite a bit.
What kind of traps were you using those days? The
best traps I like for beaver under the ice is kind of a big traps with teeth in them, with long chain. So when you catch a beaver, it'll sink them and it don't freeze to the ice. But snares, if the snares are short, they freeze up to the ice if you don't look at them right away. We shouldn't let a beaver's trap go any longer than 4 days.
You ever use deadfalls?
Not for beaver, no. I don't know what kind of deadfall to use for them. They're a pretty strong animal, you know. But I guess they have several ways of making deadfall. I know how to make deadfall for small, like marten and little things like that. But I don't think much about them. I don't know. I always think it takes too much time to make one of those deadfalls, and always think it wouldn't work. The first time I ever saw a deadfall, I was going along somebody's trap line. We were using the same trail. It was Tom Marie and this Merle Marie had a... They make some deadfalls alongside the trail, and I wanted to see what kind of a... how they make it. I walk over to it, and I know it's set for marten, the deadfall. I reach in there and pull this bait and almost broke my arm. I had parky on and everything, you know. Fall down pretty hard for marten.
You think that was a little overweighted on that one?
No. They knew how to make it, you know. I think it was made out of a green pole, but it just surprised me how much weight comes down on it like that. The pole underneath and that one up there and come down like that. No. Martin can almost wiggle out of anything, but I guess it must help him.
You know, I was wondering if we could go back for just a little. There's a part of it, and I forgot to put this microphone back on when we were talking about these pictures. And so,
how much did you miss?
I missed when we were getting the names and stuff. I turned it on.
Oh, about my mother?
Yeah. So that was Ambrose Abraham's mother,
yes,
on the left,
mm-hmm,
and your mother on the right.
Yes.
And you said you think her name is Polly?
Yes.
And what was her native name?
Nochnolno. Uh-huh.
And you also were talking about her first husband.
Was a native. Yeah, but I don't know his name.
Uh-huh. And then your father's name?
John McGuire. Uh-huh. And he died when I was 1 year old. And then she married another man after that. Again, Fisher's man by the name of Fisher. Then my mother died when I was 12 years old.
How did she die?
Pneumonia.
But when she married this other man, Fisher, you didn't stay with her then?
No. My half-sister adopted me when I was a year old. Mary Dean, her name. Last name is Mary Dean.
Was that from your mother's first marriage, Mary Dean?
Yes, uh-huh. Native. And Mary Dean got married with Billy Honey. They adopted me when I was a year old, that's 1912, I guess. Then they separated 1922, I guess, or something like that.
But I was wondering if you could maybe describe a little bit what Ruby was like when you were young. You said there were,
there was
5,000 people then.
Yes, there was a lot of people coming in here from every direction, mostly coming down the river, Yukon River, and walking, and some of them with dogs and boats and barge and rafts and every way they could get in here. There was, during the stampede, in the really heydays, was around 5,000 people.
You were here during the stampede?
Yeah, but I was a young kid.
What year was that?
Well, Ruby, 1910 and 11 is when Ruby was struck. And that's Long Creek, poor man, and well, there's another place out there where they call Tamarack, Spruce Creek, and another place where they call McCatcham, and all mining places like that. The people from all those places, and here was about 5,000 people. Right here was a pretty big place in the early days. There was a lot of stores and all kinds of shops. There were tin shops where they made stoves and safeties for stoves. They had a place over here where they were building tents, sewing tents. It's surprising what they had here in the early days. What good things they made here. And the carpenters, what wonderful work they'd done that far back. There's hotel built here with upstairs and carpenter work. You don't see that kind of work around here anymore, what the local people do. The local people around here can't do that kind of work.
That all went up in the fire?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was 23 buildings burnt down on this front street at one time. That was in 1928, I think.
What was right here when you were young?
I think there was there was hardly no building here, just a couple of small shacks, couple of little homes here in the early days. But right straight across here was a couple of horse barn and a big blacksmith shop over here. And then a big sawmill above here ways, and then there was a big Eagle Hall over here. With real hardwood floor. Real flooring, hardwood floor. I don't know how they get all them high-priced material in here those days. Didn't see no plyboard them days. Just really nice, fancy-looking boards. They had some tongue and groove board.
What was that Eagle Hall?
It was a big dance hall where they held activities for Christmas programs, and big dances.
And everybody in Ruby would go to that?
Oh, yes, from all over. And 1921, I remember. And there was the first four airplanes that come here, landed up here about 5 miles above here on a sandbar. A lot of people from New Ladder came up here with boats and There was not very many boats those days, all inboard motors. 3.5, 4 horsepower, 5 horsepower. Go along about 6-7 miles an hour. The fastest boat, I believe, would go about maybe 8 miles an hour those days. If they ever saw a boat going 10 miles an hour, the people were really surprised. They were really going fast those days, a boat like that. There were a lot of people, natives were scared of that. Airplanes, when they first saw it, we didn't know what the heck, you know. The white people know what it is, you know, but all we heard was flying machines. A lot of us were surprised to see some man walking out of that plane after it landed. A lot of natives ran away from that bar when they landed, run to the boats.
Took some talking before they try out the planes, flying them.
What's that?
Did it take some talking before native people would fly in the planes?
Well, I don't know, I didn't get you.
Well, were they afraid to do that for a while, like to get in a plane and go for a ride?
Oh, no, you couldn't get them to get in that plane, I don't think. They didn't know exactly what it was. They were afraid of it, and they all knew the planes were coming. But a lot of those at that time, a lot of natives didn't read and write, a lot of them, and it was hard for them to understand.
Do you remember the first plane ride you took?
Yes.
What was that like?
I think it was a mail plane. I went to Tanana. I think it was. Yes, it was a mail plane. I think it was about the first year they carried mail with the airplanes. It was Pacific International Airways. PIA, I think it was with Dorbrandt and Fred Milligan went to Tanana. Fred Milligan used to carry mail with Doug Team on the river and across country to McGrath in the early days. Then a year or so after that, why the mail planes took over, carrying mail all over. And he got a job with them, carrying mail in the airplane for a couple of winters. So I don't know where he is. He got to be working with them after that, I guess. Northern Consolidated Airways or the Wayne's or whatever. They changed hands around. First it was PIA.
What did it feel like to climb inside that airplane?
We had to wear a lot of clothes. I forget what kind of a plane it was, but it was cold in there, really cold. There were lots of cracks in the door. And the pilots had to wear lots of clothes. They had fur parkies, mitts and everything. And they had to warm them up out there on the river in 35 below with a fire pot. No electricity. Pretty cold. Take about an hour and a half to warm them up down there on the river, I guess. Then they were pretty noisy inside of those planes. You had to hollow your head off to talk to somebody. And there was no seat in that plane. I went up and sit down on a bag of mail sacks around there and not even belt in the airplane.
Did it seem dangerous to you?
No, didn't mind it at all. Of course, the weather was good.
You know, I was wondering, since we're talking about the first time you tried different things, when the first time you started driving dogs?
When is the first time I started driving dogs? Mm-hmm. Well, ever since I was a kid, we owned dogs all our life, you know, and pretty hard to remember. As soon as I could help my parents with dogs, and since I could walk around, come in! And been driving dogs ever since. I started owning my own then and went trapping by myself and had an awful time trapping, just barely survived. That was in depression days. Hi.
You know, I was wondering how you want your name written.
John. Johnny.
Pony. John or Johnny?
John. J-O-H-N.
Okay.
Oh!
So, you were talking about dogs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been driving dogs all my life since then. There was only once after I got married in 1936. For about 2 years, I didn't own no dogs. I was working in a mining camp for 4 years after I got married.
Which mining camp was that?
It was out there, Long Creek, and poor man.
Who were you working for?
I was working for Al Burke, the mining camp there. Then I worked for Tim Scannell, the mining camp. I was working $6 a day. And then...
What was your job in mining camp?
Wheelbarrow, pick and shovel, down underground.
Yeah. Tough work.
Yeah. But I didn't mind it.
You were young then?
Yes.
About how old?
I must have been about 25, 26 years old. Mm-hmm. I was 24 years old when I got married. Mm-hmm. And the last time I worked in the mine was out the poor man. I was working for Vance Hitt. And working all summer or something like that. And then the war come on. Then they had to close up mining camp. And then I left there. Came back to fish camp, and then I haul oil for the army, I think a couple of summers. One summer anyway, mostly.
Why did they shut down the mining camp for the war?
Well, the war was on, and we had to do work in, well... We had to go to work where there was building airfields and stuff like that on the kind of war.
What so did all the mining camps close?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was it like working in that mining camp? Did you ever see the gold?
If you know how to see the... To watch for it on top of bedrock, if you know how to, you can see it. Maybe a little streak of it, if it's coarse gold, you could almost tell where the gold is on top of bedrock. But I used to pan gold here and there, and was no problem picking up colors and small nuggets when the ground was rich.
What did you feel like when you got some nuggets in the pan?
Didn't think nothing of it. Just looked at them like as if they were ordinary gravel or rocks. Didn't think nothing of it at all.
Well, what did you think about these people that got gold fever?
Well, I guess they couldn't help it. I know some old people, prospectors, no matter how old they were, that's all they could talk about, was going prospecting way off in some country where they couldn't get to and not able to do anything for themselves, but they were still talking about wanting to go prospecting, just in their head. I see some old white people in the hospitals there can't go out no more and still talk about where there's some gold in the ground someplace. Yeah.
How about, did you ever see when they did a big cleanup over there and they got a lot of gold in one place?
No, not very much, but I've seen quite a pile of gold in the cleanup there, in the gold pans, but I never had no idea of how many $1,000 it was, you know. I just see the little pile there, and I help clean up too in the big sluice boxes, and I just don't have any idea. They say 30,000 sometime for the summer, or I don't know, $3,000-$4,000 cleanup. Every once in a while they clean up, and I don't know if they were making anything or not, because it was the price of things. It was costing them quite a bit, mining operation, you know. For oil, mostly, I guess.
To run machines?
Yeah. They had trucks and cats. And, they had to have drag line.
So did you feel any different when you saw the cleanup than when you just saw a little bit in your hand?
Yeah, I didn't realize there was that much gold in the ground when we were working there. How the miners who we were working for always crying about making no money, you know. And we never have no idea how much it's costing them. We don't even know if they're making any money or... all we know is we're getting $6 a day. Mining camp, 8 hours a day of work.
So it was like they could tell you anything, huh?
Yes.
Did you like working there, or did you want to find another job?
Well, I had no choice. That was the biggest wages there was around, $6 a day.
Was trapping pretty bad prices then?
What's that?
Trapping, how was that?
Oh, trapping was all right, but you couldn't trap in the summertime, you know. And work was scarce, really scarce. It's not like nowadays.
Do you think most of the guys that were working there felt the same way about the gold? That it was just daily work for them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They mined out there for years, so there was quite a few of them. There was Denny Coyle. He mined out there for years, and there's Tim Scannell, Al Burke, and there's Jack Shropshire, and I forget that guy's name. We used to Harry Jensen. He had a big mining going there, and another place down below there was Dick Stevens, and
these guys were all crazy for gold?
Yeah, they all had big mining. They were all mining. They had about 10, 12 people employed every one of these places. Sometimes more in the summertime when they run double shift.
Well, when they had that big rush here and all those people came here, I imagine not all of them found gold.
No, no. There were a lot of them working for wages and a lot of them prospecting, and they were all busy anyway. They were all busy. They were scattered all over the country. A lot of them cutting wood. There was a lot of wood being used up in those days. They'd done everything.
Where did they live, all those people, as soon as they came?
Oh, they had tents and cabins all over the country out there. this place was just whole hillsides here was white with tents. And when first 1911, didn't take too long after that, there were two sawmills put up here, two big sawmills. They start sawing lumber, then the buildings come up. I don't know how in the heck all them river boats got all those, a lot of material in here in a hurry. There must have been an awful lot of boats. I remember there was boats coming by every day, two or three boats coming upstream, going up. All kinds of them, river boats. A lot of them have to stop along the beach and cut their own wood for their boiler.
Did you ever ride on the river boats?
Yes. I went down the Nook River one time hunting over there and come out and hit Holy Cross in 1927. That's the first time I ever ride on a boat. Steamer Alice coming up from Holy Cross to here. Gee, Chris, it took about 7 days to get here coming upstream. Lots of mosquitoes, lots of driftwood. That boat was really slow. And one time I started work on the river boat as a deckhand. The boat was coming downstream. And I worked here longshore and on there about 10 hours, I guess, unloading freight with them. So the first mate, he asked me if I wanted a job to work on a boat. Okay, I said, all right. I was glad. I just got through working 10 hours. And got on the boat and started down the river. We got down the river about 25 miles below here. Not even lay down to have a sleep or nothing, and had to load on some wood going downstream. Load on about 15 cords of wood, pack it on the boat and put them on the barge. Went on down the river and had to stop at Kaikuk. Not even rest yet, and wanted me to work unloading freight there again. Start unloading freight, and there was lots of young boys. I knew I was pretty young myself, and I got off the boat there, and that's the last time I ever worked in a boat. Day and a half.
Day and a half.
Yeah, work over 24 hours without a sleep. Gee whiz, I'm getting pretty tired.
So you just stayed in Kaikuk?
Yeah, I come back up, caught a ride back up in somebody's boat, got back up.
Those days, how was it for Native people and white people getting along together?
Oh, they got along fine. Yeah, there was a lot of Natives that didn't know how to speak English, you know, very good, but the white people knew them. Like if the white guy running a store, Native come in, why, there's no problem for the Native to... Old-timer, storekeeper, no problem for him to find out what he wants or explaining to him how much things cost, you know. But it was kind of hard for some of them, you know. I know there's some Natives up the Kaikuk River that they never saw the Yukon River till they were about 30 years old. You know, and that's just a little ways up the Kaikuk River, say up around Cutoff or some of them places. And that's before Hooslia.